Best Neighbors, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. We're recording right now, show number 223. This is the 12th day of February 2008, and we're at the Little Ranch House Studio on Southwood Drive in Ruston, Texas. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all, of course, designed with the blind in mind. A host of the show, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you at this time, Don Patterson.
Hey, Thomas. You kind of
Don,
stretching the truth there a little bit. I understand you're still remote from Burke.
I am remote from the little trailer house in Burke, Texas.
But we've got a life-size inflatable poster here sitting in your chair. It looks just like you, so.
It actually looks better.
Yeah, it looks a little better than that.
Yeah. All right, the incomparable Don Shaw, folks.
Hey, Mr. Tom, what's happening?
Hey, Donald, how's it going with you?
What's happening in Burke, Texas today?
Oh, not a whole lot. It's been raining a little bit, and the porch is wet, and I don't like that, but I understand it's going to be sunny tomorrow.
That's right.
Tomorrow will be a better day.
Yeah, that's right. My name's Tom Houston, by the way, but here he is, folks. This is the star of the Blind Handyman Show. He's the creator. He's the producer. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Phil Fox.
That'll give you some idea.
I love to do that.
And you do it so well, and I missed it.
I love to do that. That's fun.
You wait till next week. You have Skype. You're going to sound just like you're right here in the studio.
Well, if my headset comes in time, I ordered one like the Donald has.
Yeah.
And I hope it comes by then.
It's a good headset.
A week from two. Well, go ahead and set Skype up. You can't find your microphone though, huh?
Well, it's a long story. We'll get into that someday off the air.
Is that right? So somebody borrowed it. What happened?
Well, could be. You may be on the right line.
Somebody borrowed your microphone. Well, I got one you can use. Monday, if you don't have your headset, I'm going to have to bring you a microphone. Anyway, how you feel?
Oh, I'm feeling okay, as long as I don't do anything. I'm fine. You know, if I'm just sitting on my butt.
We all have some of that as we age. Next Saturday, you'll be how old?
Let's see. I'm going to be 63.
63 next
Saturday. I was trying to forget about that, but yeah, 63.
I was reminded of it by a friend of yours from Boston reminded me of it.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, because he's got a birthday on the same day.
He does. Has a birthday on exactly the same day, and he...
Just not the same year, huh?
You know, he said, don't forget Tom's birthday and mine, and I certainly wouldn't do that. Tim Cummings.
Exactly right. And my little friend down the street, or I'd say my little friend, Jamie, my youngest grandbaby, her little girlfriend, her best friend, as a matter of fact, has a birthday on the same day.
On the 16th of February.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day is...
The
14th. By the time this runs, it will have already passed. All you guys here forgot flowers.
Yeah. Yeah, you better order those quick, because one time, three years ago, I tried ordering them, and all the stores were closed. Emily didn't believe that.
You can't do it on Valentine's Day.
Emily didn't believe that.
She didn't believe it. I told her that was a holiday, a florist holiday.
You can't order flowers on Valentine's
Day. Boy, you're telling me. They laughed. I called floor noise, and there was just this big laughter in the background. A dozen roses.
Oh, yeah.
Not on the day. It won't happen.
Well, it was late in the day, too.
I want to tell you one thing. Now, this is changing the subject a little bit.
All right. We need to change the subject.
But last night, I watched a basketball game between the University of Texas and the number two or three team, depending on which poll you look at, Kansas and the country.
Yeah.
And that might have been the best basketball game I've ever watched.
Really? Who won it?
Oh, Texas won it.
Oh, okay.
But which made it extra nice.
Wouldn't have been such a good game if they hadn't.
Well, no, I was already saying it, and my middle granddaughter was watching it with me. And I was already telling her near the end, I said, win, lose, or draw, this has been one heck of a game. It was like a 2-point difference, and at the end of the game, Kansas had put up a shot, and it came off the rim. and then the game was over, or it would have been tied and gone into overtime.
You see, Mr. Houston, they should have saved all that energy and just played the last 10 seconds.
That's exactly right.
they were up and down that court a thousand times
before then.
That's what it all came down to, was the last 10 seconds.
The last 10 seconds of the ball game. Yeah. But it was exciting.
Well, I missed it. I hate that.
I'm afraid I missed it.
We both missed that.
Myself. But.
Anyway, do you have any list, what we call list mail?
I do. I have a battery question for you. Claudia sent in. And she says, does anyone know the rules concerning batteries? Should you always put the same type of batteries into an item?
Yes.
Asking because we have a 4-year-old. We're constantly going through batteries. Sometimes I open packages of different brands and put them in a toy, et cetera, et cetera. But I've heard this is not a good thing. Any ideas?
I don't know that in a toy it would make that much difference. Do you?
I don't either.
I don't think it would in throwaway batteries. I mean, I think, they 1.2?
Yeah, the voltage, I thought you were going to say, should you put the same type batteries in a charger, is what I thought you were going to say, and it wasn't. So scrap what I just said.
But I think in rechargeable batteries, which if I had a 4-year-old, I promise you that's what I'd be using.
Well, yeah.
You need to use the same kind. Like most chargers, or a lot of chargers, charge in groups of four. So I would keep four together and four together and...
They say don't mix,
you know, yesterday's batteries with today. I mean, if you're going to charge them all at the same time and put them. Don't put one battery with three that you think are good, you know.
But, yeah, in an item, in a toy or whatever, the brand doesn't, you know, matter. They just say don't put a good and a bad battery in, or a low battery in.
Because the bad one will draw the good one down.
That's right.
You know, that won't. If you're going to use a lot of batteries, you need to kind of keep track. I'd buy a charger in 4 or 8 or whatever you're using and just, you know. And speaking of that, Don, tell us about your Don has discovered a new battery that he likes a lot.
It's the Railback hybrid batteries, and they're excellent. They're AA and AAA batteries, and what's nice about them is just straight out of the package, they're charged and ready to go, unlike a lot of rechargeable batteries that you have to charge after you buy the battery.
Okay.
And they... most rechargeable batteries, you know, will drain so much a day. If you don't use an item in a month, you know, the battery will be dead. But these are guaranteed to hold their shelf life charge up to a year.
Yeah, I've seen. So. I looked at a chart, Don, and I bought 2 packs of them. And it says in 6 months they guarantee them, which it could be more, but they to at least have 80% of their charge in 6 months.
Yeah, they're
and
excellent.
Like I say, unlike the nickel metal hydrides, which... Like, I charge some, and I go a week later,
and you turn it on, and goodbye, Charlie.
You know.
What charger do you have to buy a new charger for hybrids?
Nope.
No.
Use your nickel metal hydride charger.
That's right.
The only difference I can tell, well, the cost is about the same. 4 for about $9, give or take. Okay, and that'll probably come down some. Right now, Rayovac seems to be the only company doing it, so I don't know if they have a patent. But anyway, also is the... recharge life doesn't seem, in other words, 500 times they claim versus 1,000 for the nickel metal hydride. So.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But I would take the 500 any day versus the long shelf life.
For the things that I use them for, I don't want to put batteries in and wind up dead batteries.
Yeah, that's me.
You know, I had a charger that would charge the AA's and the AAA's 4 at a time. And then I guess it was my future son-in-law that's going with my oldest granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in here for a while.
You mean the one that's got your microphone?
Left a charger here that will charge, and I've got it back there somewhere, that will charge AA's, AAA's, C batteries, 9-volt batteries, just every battery you can think of. I don't know where he got it or anything about it. I've never tried it. But I'm going to have to one of these days on a 9-volt. Do they make a 9-volt rechargeable battery?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, but now does it charge nickel cadmium or nickel metal hydride?
Oh, okay. Now, there's a good question.
That's what you got to know.
I wouldn't know. I'd have to have it in my hands. If it had it written on it, I could tell you.
Well, some of them have a switch that you just flick. depending on, I mean, there's make chargers that'll do both kinds with just the flick of a switch.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, my goodness.
I bet the reason he left it there is it charges nickel cadmium, and they don't make those anymore.
And he probably traded a good microphone
probably
for
got
it.
A good microphone for it.
Yeah.
That's what we're
That's
thinking.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Probably. You may be hitting the nail right on the head.
He has a nice Electro-Voice microphone, and you have this crappy charger.
That no, I'm... it's back there somewhere. They wouldn't do me that way. I don't believe.
moving right along.
Let me knock on this wood here.
Our next. Yeah.
Okay, I hope we know something about sheetrock patching.
Oh, we do. Pat's an expert at it.
Here's a guy who says, "Hi, guys, I need to fix a hole I created by mistake." I can see him madden. Uh-huh. Okay. I have a hole in my wall. It's about 2 inches by 2 inches.
Huh.
There's a second layer of sheetrock behind the one with the big hole. I'd put body filler in it if I thought it would work. I'm not really sure on how to fix this. Can someone enlighten me? Thanks, y'all. Roger.
Yes, we can.
I could.
Enlighten him.
All right, especially since there is a sheetrock behind it.
Yeah, that helps.
If for some reason you happen to have a scrap piece of sheetrock around, I don't know that you did this. I mean, you may not. I mean, this hole may have occurred without you doing any sheetrocking. Cut you a piece that kind of fits the hole. Doesn't have to fit exact, and then you can tape it over it. But if not, 2 inches by 2 inches is no big deal. They make patching kits. Or just go down to your favorite hardware store and buy you a thing of spackling compound.
Okay.
And you just put you a big blob of that in there and get you a putty knife or a troweling knife, at least 4 inches. And just smooth that off, go back and forth and up and down across that. And or if you can buy you, and it's cheap, even if you had to buy a whole roll, 25 feet or whatever, of sheetrock tape, just put you a piece of tape over there and put you a light coat of your spackling compound or sheetrock mud on the outside.
In other
that.
Words, there won't be anything behind it. It'll just be a tape over
well,
the hole.
Well, no, he said there was another piece of sheetrock behind this one.
Yeah.
So he has a good base to start with. Now, your hole that he's trying to fill up is not a half inch thick, deep.
So just put in a piece in there, fit a piece in there, and put some tape over it and spackle it.
Yeah, and spackle it and put some, or, like I say, just don't put, even if you don't happen to have a piece of sheetrock, just put spackling compound and then tape and float over it. Or they make, if there was nothing behind your hole, if you just had a hole and you're in between two studs and there's nothing, they make patching kits that actually has a little piece of screen that you put over that hole and then you float your sheetrock mud over that and it goes in the little holes of the screen wire and firms up and makes you a nice solid patch.
Just the size of a fist.
Yes, or a doorknob.
That's what I was thinking.
It sounds
the size... It
sounds to me like a doorknob got pushed up against the wall where there wasn't one of the door stoppers.
That can happen.
Yeah.
Or his daughter was dating some guy he really didn't like.
That had Thomas's microphone.
I've seen.
That sounds about the size of a microphone.
if that's too simple for you, I did print a response from Dale Evans.
Well, let's hear it. Dale's always got good responses. He knows everything.
And it's a little more complicated than that, but he says, are you saying 2 inches by 2 inches? Are the edges sharp? ? If so, I just crush the edges down a little, then I take a narrow putty knife, press the hole about half full of mud, let it set up overnight, then squeeze in some more to bring it up near full and let that dry. Knock off any high points with a trowel, then just smear a little mud around the edge and over the hole and tear off strips of paper tape, laying them into the mud and pressing them in with the knife. And when that dries, knock off any lumps and fill in whatever's left of the hole, burying the paper tape with mud. Now drag the trowel over it, pressing down at a really flat angle over an area 2 or 3 inches times the size of the hole. Gently feather out towards the edges, then sand when it's dry. You fill the hole in stages because the mud will shrink as it dries, and you will usually need at least three applications for this shrinkage to minimize.
So basically the same thing you said, except a little more elaborate.
Yeah, it's a little more elaborate. It's a little more complicated, I think.
Yeah.
I saw it on DIY one time that were patching a hole in some sheetrock, and it was more like Don was saying, cut out a piece of sheetrock about the size of the hole, and using the tape, and then you put the stuff over that, let it dry, smear it out, smooth it out, and paint it. But
sheetrock is a pain.
That's another way of doing it.
Sheetrock is a pain.
Yeah, it is.
But in the bottom line, though, thank goodness, think about it. If these were all elaborate wood walls and you got a hole in them, how would you patch them? Sheetrocks are the neatest thing.
Yeah, but your doorknob doesn't go through wood.
Gonna put a dent in that wood.
Yeah, you put it, but you have a door stopper back there.
Well, you need a door stopper. Yeah.
You need a round thing. Lowe sells all kinds of things that go behind a doorknob. A round rubber thing I've got somewhere.
Dale Campbell has been on the show just a bunch of times before. Yeah. Said that our guest, in fact, we're going to talk to today, along with doing a lot of car, auto type things, also is a hell of a sheetrock hanger. So,
well, that's what we need.
A multi-talented guest we got coming up today.
Oh, you're going to talk to Dale Campbell today?
No,
Dale told us about this guy.
Oh, okay.
That we're going to talk with today, our guest.
Oh, all righty.
Do one more, right quick.
Okay, here's one on 1.6 gallon toilets.
Oh!
He said, well, we now have two of these so-called water-saver toilets. They seem to work okay, but just try to plunge one of those bad boys. The problem is that there simply isn't enough water in those things to get a good plunge.
Yeah.
Well, back to the workshop, and I'm going to build me a two-holder.
Are these the ones with a little short tank or the little bitty tank on the back?
Yeah, a little low flow toilets.
Boy, now I don't understand this exactly, because if the commode is stopped up, it looks like there might be more water in that bowl. It's the water from the bowl that you're gonna.
It makes a difference.
In other words, if it didn't have enough water in it, and you think it stopped up, then get you a bucket, take your mop bucket, and dump you about half a bucket full in there.
Yeah, you could add some water.
I really don't think you're going to have much choice. It's, you can pay me now or pay me later. The government's going to make us all go to. I mean, that's going to be the norm.
Standard.
It's going to be the standard. So
I understand with a conversation I had with my brother, and I wasn't even thinking about toilets myself, but he was talking about a toilet that if you just needed a little water to flush it, you flushed it. With one flush, and then there was another flush you could use for the big flush.
It's called the Atmer flush.
Yeah.
Well, then we got into this actually a couple of weeks
ago. And I mean a big flush.
We got into this a couple of weeks ago talking about there's also some that use some kind of air, that's created by the way they're designed. So I would just say if you don't think you got enough water in there, add a little more and then...
Hope for the best.
In other words, your brother says that there's going to be a switch on there that you can go big or small flush, depending on what you...
I don't know if it has two handles on it. It
says,
two tanks. I don't know how that works.
And it says number one...
One uses so much water, and the other uses more water.
And it says number one and number two on it.
I guess. I don't know, but that's what he was talking about.
Well, we were talking also...
I've not seen that.
Last time, Thomas, about going at these hotels that have all gotten efficient, but when you flush them, it sounds like an explosion. You know, you think a terrorist set off something.
Just like the cruise
yeah,
ship thing.
Yeah.
Big noisy. All right, Houston Vic, we're going to go. And hopefully your headset will come in. Call me when it does, and we'll do some Skype testing.
And we just know that you're coming in a couple of weeks, right?
Oh, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, we'd love to get rid of this dummy. We'd love to have you back. So.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to see that dummy out of that chair,
see,
too.
Next week on Skype, you can just stay on the show and ask questions and just be like you're here.
There you go.
Talk to you in a day or two. Thanks, sir.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thomas Houston Vic.
Yeah.
All right, there we
go.
There it is. Ready to go.
Yep.
All right, let's pause a minute and get the guest ready. Don Patterson's with us. Don, Sean, and Phil Parn. This little show you're listening to is called The Blind Handyman. Certainly not Kenny G. Now, is it?
I think not.
Let's see. Do I have everything turned up here? Got maybe some things I don't need turned up. Hello there. Welcome back to our little blind handyman show. And we're talking with Steve, and I've forgotten your last name, sir.
Scott.
Steve Scott. How are you?
Not bad. And you?
Well, we're all right. And where are you?
In Kalamazoo, Michigan, where it's freezing cold and snowing as we speak.
Wow.
You're not old enough to remember Kalamazoo, Kalamazoo. you don't remember that song, do you?
No, I can't say I do.
I've got a gal in Kalamazoo.
It was a big hit.
Glenn Miller.
Back in the
40s. Glenn Miller.
I think I have heard that somewhere along the lines.
In the 40s. Steve, you don't try to remember it. It's long gone, hopefully.
So, Steve, how far are you from the UP?
Probably about, from here, good 7-8 hours.
Oh, goodness. So what part of the state are you in? South?
Western,
okay. Yeah.
Well, tell us what's the UP. We don't...
Oh, Upper Peninsula.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
We didn't know. Don and I didn't know. We're not... We're just poor Texas boys.
You should probably stay there where it's warm. You couldn't handle this stuff.
Well, actually, it's about to 39 here right now, which is, I guess, not too bad, huh?
I think it's about... 13-14 here right now.
Whoa.
I don't know what the wind chill is, but
man,
crazy.
That's too much for me. Have you lived there all your life? Are you a Michigander?
When I was a child, I lived here, and then I just moved back here, about 9 months ago from New York, upstate New York.
Upstate New York. Well, it's not quite as cold there, is it?
Well, actually, the snowfall there was much worse than what it is here. I mean, we would get 5-6 feet of snow at one dumping, so.
Yeah.
Wow.
We saw on the news yesterday or day before that someplace in Minnesota was like 45 below. Does that make
that's,
sense?
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know if we recall any of the news from last winter, but we had gotten, I think it was about 11.5 feet in about 7 days, and that was on top of the 4.5-5 foot base we already had.
Yeah.
The snowbanks were literally to the roof of my house, and it was just crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what's International Falls, Minnesota. Is that what it is?
I don't know. It was cold.
Supposed to be the coldest place in the world. I couldn't handle that type of cut.
Oh, yeah, that'd just be.
Those Texas boys would be.
Not
frozen.
Enough beer to keep you warm enough for that, huh?
And I think you said your vision, you have no vision now.
That's correct.
You you lost it in a very unusual way. Can you kind of tell us about that?
Well, I mean, it's really not too unusual. I was born with congenital glaucoma, and I had sight problems all throughout. And then I had enough sight to do some racing as I was a child and through my early teens. And then I think I lost it. I was 17, I believe, 18. And that was it. That story.
You said some racing. You mean car racing?
Yeah, I started. I started off when I was very young, at 5 years old, racing mini bikes and that sort of thing. And then I switched over to, and then go karts for another couple years. And then I got into motocross, dirt bikes. Honda 125s and 250Rs, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then got into a little bit of the car stuff.
Did you do dirt track?
I'm sorry?
Dirt track racing or stock cars or?
Oh, for the canal, drag racing.
Oh.
For cars. It's always been drag racing.
Okay.
And I think you said yesterday your statement was you have a need for speed.
Yes, sir.
You need to go fast.
Yes, there's nothing like it unless you've gone... close to 200 mile an hour and a quarter mile with G's pushing you back in your seat. There's just almost nothing better.
So, Steve, did you see on the news where the guy's dragster blew up in California and burnt, just a ball of fire and he walked out?
I heard about it.
His wife was in Michigan and she had the suit. They say that he was saved by his suit.
Yeah, and I believe it. I heard a little bit about it yesterday. My uncle races on a professional circuit, and I heard a little bit about it through the family yesterday, but I don't have any details.
I saw it on CNN, and this car, he was halfway down the quarter of a mile thing, and it literally blew into pieces.
Yeah, did you see what happened to John Force in his funny car last year?
No.
Last season? Yeah, well, he runs a Top Fuel dragster and a funny car. And last year, as he was going through the traps, the car next to him blew out a tire. That, in turn, took him out, and his car literally broke in half, and the front half continued to go down through the traps, and the back half, the car just came apart. Long story short, he was stuck in his seat with his feet and legs just dangling all over the place, and yeah, it was a pretty bad wreck, but he made it through. He's racing again this season.
Well, this guy was
amazing.
Today, they talked to him, and he said, well, I'm lucky to be here. He had a small second-degree burn on one hand.
Yeah,
and his
those damn blowers is what caused half the problem. They put them blowers on there, and those guys are running nitromethane along with alcohol. And when those blowers go, I mean, you're literally driving a time bomb down the track. I mean,
well, that sounds like the last drink we mix, Phil.
Yeah. I think you told me that you had set some land speed record in New York before you lost your eyesight?
Yes.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, that's just at a small local track in New York in a town called Cicero.
Uh-huh.
It's called Estes Safety Park Drag Strip. And they're just a bunch of local weekend warriors kind of go out there, and they hold a couple of national events throughout the season. But, just used to race around out there and just have some fun. And, you know, I was never able to do it professionally, but, you know, it's just a lot of fun.
You weren't ever able to do it professionally. It was just, you just did it for your own enjoyment.
Yes, that's correct. I grew up, my whole family is all mechanically inclined. As I said, my uncle races on the professional circuit, but my dad was always a weekend warrior and had some really nice cars, and my grandfather always had nice cars and that kind of thing. And, yeah, I just kind of grew up as a child just around cars. At the age of 10 years old, I was already swapping motors and transmissions and rebuilding carburetors, and I wasn't into playing G.I. Joe and building forts.
Yeah. And I think you said that you didn't know any other blind people because of what you do. And what do you do for a living?
I'm still currently an auto technician for a living.
All right.
At a dealership or at a private shop? Or?
No, I'm actually my fiance and I are in the process of opening up our own shop now, slowly but surely.
Very good.
Very good.
That's what I did in New York before I moved here. I had a used car dealership and repair facility. And I ran that on my own for a number of years and decided to come to Michigan with family and friends. And so I closed it down there, and here we are.
And you're going to open another one that's going to be the same deal, going to rebuild cars and resell them? Or?
Well, I don't rebuild cars. I rebuild engines if need be, that kind of thing. And I'll do, head gaskets and, rebuild rear ends and that kind of stuff. But what I primarily do is buy late model used cars.
Uh-huh.
Right.
At auctions.
Or whatever. And then whatever repairs they need, I go through and do and sell. And and then also I just repair, repairs for any Joe Schmo off the street.
Yeah.
Have you come up with a way, because now everything is computerized, as I guess you know that better than anybody. Have you figured out a way to get to, when they say you take your car and you plug it in and the computer will tell you what's wrong with it, have you figured out a way to make it tell you?
Yes, I have. excuse me. I currently use a Genesis scanner, which is made by OTC. Which will scan any car, whether it be foreign, domestic, imported, doesn't matter, from when computers first came out from back in the 70s, and I can currently do up to 08.
Really? And you've got that talking to you?
Yes. The way it works is, excuse me, when you plug the scanner into the vehicle and it reads the data, then there's wireless software that's in my laptop. And then, of course, with JAWS, will read everything to me. And then you operate the scanner with the laptop as well, because the way the scanner actually is built, if you hold it in your hands, it kind of looks like a Nintendo game, like a video game.
Yeah.
And there's one button for the whole bunch of menu screens, and that obviously won't work. So you essentially run everything right through the laptop and JAWS. So I can essentially do anything that a sighted person would do. It's just ran a little different.
The car guys on List before have discussed the diagnostic tools and things that some of them use, and it's always interesting to see how blind-friendly they really are.
A lot of this stuff, first of all, anything digital can be made to talk.
Yeah.
So when I first got into this, I was really paranoid as these late model cars were coming out with this sequential fuel injection, crossfire ignition systems, where you really needed to have a way to diagnose things. You needed a lamp scope. I was kind of really spazzing out, but then when I got my hands on this Genesis through my Mac dealer, he hooked me up with the president of the company and also the designer of this particular diagnostic equipment. And he had already had it in mind to come up with a speed software program for it. It was already kind of in a development phase.
Uh-huh.
Well, once everything got figured out, then I was kind of one of the first test cases to run this equipment. And it works. Works really well. I mean, there's nothing I can't do that any other technician would do at a dealership.
Well, Steve, is there some kind of interface? I mean, is there a program that's on your laptop that goes in conjunction with the Genesis?
Yes, all Genesis software.
Okay, then though the question is, this was not specifically designed for blind people, or was it?
Yes, that was the original intent, because what happens with a lot of your technicians, as you guys know, as you get older, you start to lose your sight or...
Yeah,
right.
Some things happen. So, yes, the Steve guy, like I said, who designed this program, had a, maybe not totally blind, but he had a visually impaired person in mind to run this equipment. So that's
really?
He started working on the software. And in addition to that, a lot of your technicians... can't read very well.
Right.
Somebody who's not only blind, but can't read very well,
right.
That kind of thing. Again, if you can just learn how to get through the basics and JAWS will read it to you, then it'll go.
So it's basically off the shelf.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's neat. That's really neat.
The problem with it is, like any other adaptive equipment, it's just ungodly expensive. For
the
computer itself with no software, you're up at around $5,000. Then your software is around another $3,000.
And then JAWS runs at $1,000.
Yeah, and then you have to, and then you have to be taught how to make everything work.
Yeah.
When I got it out of the box, it wouldn't work with JAWS right away. There had to be some custom scripts wrote and that kind of thing.
Boy, more than anything in the world, Steve, we need you on our blind handyman list.
I'm on the list currently. I just signed up last night, actually.
Well, you need to watch that David Farron now. You need to be careful. Maybe he'll take good care of you.
Well, he's all over the place, isn't he? I see him on every list you could just about think of.
Is that right? I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
But, he is the master of several, has several lists of his own that he started. But because there are a lot of blind would-be mechanics on this list that don't know what you know, and that is that JAWS will read this Genesis program.
Yes, it will definitely work. It's worked for me, and it takes a lot of patience, because not only, we'll just take blindness out of the equation. You take a new technician or somebody who's only been in it for a couple of years and you throw the scanner at them, first of all, you've got to be able to run the scanner successfully. There's a lot to this particular piece of equipment. You can do anything from, your drivability tests where you hook it up, you drive down the road, and you're watching 8 or 9 sensors do different things all at the same time, along with your vehicle speeds. I mean, you can read ABS sensors. You can read your transmissions, airbags. It just does anything you could possibly imagine. Plus, it has a lab scope in it, so you've got to be able to know the knowledge to run that piece of equipment and then to run all the JAWS commands along with it. There's a lot to know, so it just takes a lot of patience and...
A large learning curve.
Yeah, very large.
So, Steve, you mentioned your fiance and y'all were doing this together, so obviously you're her interest, but is automotive... part of her background? Is she knowledgeable
in
this? Okay, so...
Not at all. She runs the office.
I was going to say, it sounds to me...
Computer issues and Keeps me under wraps and makes sure I behave.
She's going to be the financial manager, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
you were better off that way.
Definitely the financial manager. Don't turn me loose. It would be trouble.
Yeah. I'd say that's an advantage. You don't want, you know, it's like, you know, if your wife is in radio, then she's got preconceived notions. Anyway, it's a wonderful world, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah.
But, and so you're in the process of opening a shop. A guy drives in with his car. My car's doing this. You can plug up your scanner, and just like the dealership would,
absolutely,
and say, "Hey, this probably is what you were. You know, this is the fuel rail."
Absolutely. And what I like about being in my position better actually is a lot of customers will come in and say, "Well, you know, when I drive down the road, the car's pulling, or you know, it seems like it's wandering, or it's got a bounce, or a vibration, or a rattle, whatever have it." What I like to do is just get right in the car with the customer and go for a ride, because no one knows their car better than the owner.
Yeah.
You know, for any technician to jump in a car, to them, it might just be normal. You know, but to someone who drives that car every day, they know when something's not right.
Right.
I just prefer to just get right in the car with them and just go for a ride.
All right, Steve, and this begs another question. They see your sign out there, Steve or Scott's technical, I mean, auto repair, whatever. They come in, and then they discover that you're a blind guy. I mean, come on, we've been there all our lives, so what has been, I mean, and they say, and you want to go for a ride with me? I mean, what are the reactions? Tell us a funny story here.
You know, I've got so many funny stories, I wouldn't even know where to begin, because most of the customer reaction has been really, really positive, and no questions asked. You can kind of feel when some of them are a little leery, they're just not saying anything. But what I always found funny is you get somebody that comes in, for example, driving a Ford Escort,
uh-huh.
and they're just real leery and, you know, I don't know if I want to do this. But then you get another guy bring you in. I had a customer bring me in a 78 Corvette, needed a motor put in it. No questions asked. Just dropped off the car and called him when it was done, and he came and picked it up, and away he went.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just kind of funny how that works out sometimes.
Yeah, how it works out.
But right. Most people are really, really good. When I first started in this business, it was rough. I really had to earn a reputation and a name for myself, and that was mostly through, like, other car dealerships, their part stores that would deliver, part yards that you would deal with.
I'm sorry.
We like junkyards.
you know, they would always ask the questions, you know, well, how can you? I don't believe it kind of thing. But after doing it for years and, you know, you get good feedback, well, then, you know, I would have regular car dealerships calling me where I would go in for 1 or 2 days a week just to help them figure out, you know, cars that were being a problem or, you know, whatever.
I interviewed a guy that worked at, I think, a dealership, and his deal was to change a speedometer while looking and talking to the customer. Because he didn't have to look up under the dash. He could feel up under there.
That's right.
Right.
He really liked to do that
all the time. That's pretty funny.
Looking and talking to the customer while your hands are working and you're under there doing this or that. And then, well, it's done. Well, how could it be? You didn't, you know.
I do that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I get a lot of where customers would just want to watch. You know, they would just stand there and just watch and, you know, just be talking or whatever while I'm working. And sometimes I don't mind. Sometimes I do. But I don't know.
All right. Also, I guess you have a pit or a lift or something, but we talked to this one guy who worked on cars all the time, and he put a bag over his head when he got into the car.
Was he that ugly? What?
No, he didn't need to see anyway. He didn't want all that crap dropping in his face, so he just put a grocery bag over his head and slid under the car and did whatever he was going to do, because he didn't get that crap in his eyes and in his
face.
That's
right.
I never heard it. That's pretty funny.
All that grease and dirt and stuff.
Story. Yeah, I take the garbage out like that sometimes with a bag if it's raining.
Don Shaw and I knew an old man who was totally blind, and if it was raining and he'd be outside doing what he would put this bag. See, a sighted person would have cut little eye holes in it, and everybody would have said, "Oh, wow, neat." Because he was blind, there were no holes, and you could just see this garbage bag roaming around.
Roaming around the yard.
Now, let's talk about test driving. Your lady will have to do the test driving for you.
Well, I don't think we want her driving because she's blind as well. So.
Oh, your fiance is blind as well.
Yeah, so some customers really might frown if we throw her the keys and tell her to go test drive it.
Yeah, that could be a bit of a problem.
I didn't realize that she was blind as well. So you will have to have a test driver there.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't. I talked to her last night. She didn't sound blind.
Well, do I sound blind? Oh, do you sound blind?
I hope not.
I certainly hope not.
Let's see, Donald.
And the car talk guys, you told me yesterday you really liked the car and actually had.
Those guys are great.
Had visited with those guys.
Yes, those guys are absolutely great.
I record them every week and listen, but they talk about things like, I think it's the crank angle sensor. What the hell is that?
You mean a crank position sensor?
I think he said crank angle sensor.
Well,
that blew me away. What is
that? I've never heard of a crank angle sensor, but they have a crank position sensor.
Maybe that's it.
And what that work coincides with the cam position sensor, and basically what those two sensors do is they read each other, then they send a reference signal to the coil pack. Well, actually, it would be the ignition control module. They, in turn, tell the coils when to spark, to send the sparks down to your spark plug.
Okay. All right. I understand. I got it.
So, Steve,
What all of that stuff does, basically, in layman's terms that you would really understand, crank position sensor, cam sensor, do the job of an old-fashioned distributor.
Yeah.
Okay.
It turns it all into electronic and eliminates headaches and problems.
Points
and
all that crap, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Steve, you have the finest equipment. You're talking about your Genesis, and, of course, I have no idea really what that is, and then your Jaws and all that. But and I know that your family and dads and granddads, and that's a good way to learn. But have you had any formal automotive training? I mean, you know, you could
absolutely
give a...
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Zero.
See, I don't see how you gained all of that...
Just doing it.
How many years are you?
37.
All right. Well, just a youngster. Just a child.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's about like my audio engineer training.
Yeah.
That I've had so much of.
Experience, I guess.
No, I think it's fantastic. See, because, you know, you could take the average guy, even with have some knowledge, and he may or may not know, like you said, what the instrument that he was trying to use was telling him.
Yeah.
If he didn't know, I mean, if I had a Genesis, so what? You know? And
yeah.
So I think that is amazing that you've picked all this up.
Learned how to.
Oh, yeah, I just did it all by, you know, experience and trial and error and, you know, successes. And I've had my share of horror stories and mistakes and,
yeah.
You know, just learning as you go. And I've worked in a lot of other shops as well with, you know, older technicians who have been around forever and really good guys, and, you know, so I learned a lot from them.
That's what I mean. You have had just paying jobs where you weren't trying to run your own business. You worked for other people.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I had my first job as an auto tech when I was 20, I believe.
Really?
I started off at a place in New York called Custom Auto Repair, and he was a big race guy and raced himself, and, you know, I learned a lot from him, and I've always been employed in that kind of field, and just something that I like to do, so I wasn't willing to just give it up and say, poor pity me, I can't see now, so I'm going to sit home.
That's good.
I have a passion for the automobile and that I love, and my God, I'm going
to
do it probably to the day I die.
Well, in addition to all the automotive things you do, you also are involved in plumbing and carpentry and sheetrock and a lot of other things also.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't have the knowledge that I do as far as the automobile stuff goes, but, you know, I'm a pretty good plumber and, you know, do okay sheetrocking and stuff. Certainly no professional, but
yeah.
I do okay at it.
So just a super blind guy does it all. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, that is.
You know how it
super.
Is. Jack of all trades, master of none.
It is great to make your acquaintance, and it's good to have you on the list.
Yeah, it is. Glad you joined the list.
You will be a great asset to our list, and we're going to keep up with you. And 6-8 months from now, we'll call you back and
see how the shop is going.
See how the shop is going. Maybe find out your new life experiences if you married this lady or what's going on.
We're certainly going to. You can count on it.
Can I tell Steve this quick story?
Sure.
All right. here about 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, my wife and I built a new home. It was our dream home. And we were newlyweds, second marriage for both, and we built our new home. 3 months later, after we got in our new home, somebody 4 miles away built a drag strip. It was his dream.
Nice.
And I can hear it every Saturday and Sunday and Friday.
No, that's my kind of guy.
So you need to come down here and buy us out.
All right, that'll work.
Yeah.
Steve Scott, I want to thank you, sir, and we'll be in touch, and we'll look for your posts on the list.
Thank you. Sounds
nice
good.
To meet you, Steve.
Talk with you.
Have a good one, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
What a guy. He's lost his... And I asked him, I said, was it worth it? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's something.
He's got a need for speed.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a little short break, and then I don't know what we're going to talk about. We'll come up with something, I bet. Don Patterson, Don Shaw, I'm Phil Parr. You're listening to The Blind Handyman. But we're back.
Yeah.
The final portion of the Blind Handyman Show, number 223. Don Pat?
Yeah. So one of these times, we're just not going to make it back, right?
Just not going to.
It could happen.
You just never know. A break and not come back.
Oh, yeah. Just let Kenny G keep playing this.
All right. Got a
there
couple
he is,
of
right there.
A couple of things, opposite ends of the spectrum, or at least they don't. One doesn't have anything to do with that. We like to bring news items, or if it is, and a lot of times we're behind the times. Y'all probably know about this, but anyway, there's a website called readthistome.org.
Yeah,
and you can. They have an 800 phone number. You can with that. If you have a telephone, no computer required, and a fax machine, cheap little fax machine, you can fax them messages. I mean, not messages, a bill, a handwritten note, a complex bill that has a lot of graphics, or even pages out of a book, and someone will call you back and read it to you.
Something like a car repair manual that you might need a page read of.
Now, the little blurb that I have on it, it's good throughout the United States. It doesn't say what the time requirements or how many pages or what, you know, that
right.
you could send. So I guess one would need to look into that. But anyway, I think it's about the neatest thing since sliced bread.
Is this for blind people?
It is for blind people. It is readittome.org, and it was started by SAVETZ, Savitz Publishing. It is manned by volunteers. Then they're always needing volunteers, and they wouldn't mind having a donation, but it doesn't, I mean, it's a non-profit. They're not in it for the bucks.
Yeah,
and so,
right.
Like I say, I don't know what, obviously, I don't think you could send them a Tale of Two Cities and have them read it to you.
Right.
A handwritten note or a bill or something that you needed that was just between you and that a scanner may not pick up. A senior citizen who could dial the phone and use a fax machine, but that may not be computer savvy. So I just thought it was a...
It could be a handwritten type thing that a scanner just wouldn't be able to read.
How did you stumble across this, Don?
Emily, my dearly beloved, found this. She tries to keep her hand in all of the upcoming and technology that has to do with blind people, and she printed this off for me, so you might want to discuss that.
I've never heard of it, but that's of course, you know about home readers will read anything.
Yeah.
If you send it to them, they'll read it for
Well,
you.
See, we didn't know. I didn't know about this.
Yeah, those folks are still around. They're still...
Home readers. I get a catalog
from
every year about things that they have, and they have probably 30 catalogs or more, Sears, Walmart, Kmart, Radio Shack, anything that they'll send you. If you just write them and say, I need a copy of the Radio Shack catalog, you'll get four cassettes with the Radio Shack catalog. Okay. Now, of course, cassettes are inordinately hard to get around in.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't move around real well.
Because this thing is, all you do is send these people a callback number, and then they call you and read it. Yeah. And there was also a similar, you know, organization where if you wanted something brailled, if you sent them the print copy, they would send like a letter, and they would
transcribe it.
They charge for that, though.
So anyway, that was that.
That's pretty good.
It is. Yeah, it's a neat service.
Now, y'all know me, Don the Dog Lover.
We like
Have four puppies anyway. And so I have this little border collie that I've become real fond of. I mean, he is an intelligent creature, but he is, let's say, what do you call it? Monofocused. Does that mean one? He wants to play ball. So I cannot go on my patio, be it summer or winter, that I don't wind up with a tennis ball in my lap. And he is out there waiting to catch it, and so you would spend all your time. Well, I went to my computer, to trusty old Google that I love so well, and I typed in ball thrower, T-H-R-O-W-E-R. Well, I got tennis machines, baseball machines, but in one little thing, go.go ball thrower. Went to it, and it's the neatest little machine in the world. It's $149. I didn't know my dog was worth that, but he's going to get one. It has a little contraption. It weighs 11 pounds. It runs by power supply, AC or battery, 6D cell.
Uh-huh.
Has a bucket on top. It will hold 20-something tennis balls, and you can set the distance from 15 feet to 30 feet that it throws it. It has a remote control, so you can sit in your lawn chair and squeal your beverage of
choice.
And instead of bending over to pick up the slimy wet ball that Tip has just brought you and get mud all over you, you can just have him trained. This guy said he did his dog in 2 days to put the balls in the bucket when he brings them back, and you just punch the remote control and it throws one.
That is really cool.
And this dog, if you've ever owned an obsessed dog, if you've ever owned a border collie, you know what I'm talking about.
Well, let me tell you, that's neat. I'd love to have one. My Sarah Hunting and Gathering.
Uh-huh.
She tamed a pork loin Sunday. She was able to She hunted and gathered a pork loin off of the cabinet Sunday. Hunting and gathering, she gathered a pork loin.
Well,
the week before that, she had gathered an Olympus recorder.
Oh, poor Rosie got.
Wow.
I was going to cook a link. I had this big Chapel Hill, and I went to the plate on the counter and. Plate was empty.
Luann said, what's this plate doing sitting here? Well, that's got the pork on it. Phil, it doesn't. So Sarah was in the floor of the bedroom. She had hunted she had attacked and conquered a pork loin.
Anyway.
That's wild. That's unreal.
We washed it off and cooked it. What the hell? Everything else?
Well, Rose, there was no link to wash off from Rose. The good news is, that's the machine. The bad news is there, they have limited, the guy in Washington State invented it.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it is right now back ordered to the tune of 4 or 5 months.
Wow.
Yeah, and I did ask the lady specifically, there's a company called Chimp Feet, like as in chimpanzee, chimpfeet.com. They're a pet supply. Buy your pet a gift.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, it's in California, and I called her, and she said she took my name. She said, as soon as I get one, I will call you. But I think it would just be the neatest. You know, it sounds a little expensive, but, man, think of the time it will save me if I can sit on the patio in peace.
Man, I wish I would have invented it, especially since they're sold out everywhere and orders waiting to be sent.
You,
man.
Well, I've thought about trying to buy the guy out.
No kidding.
It'll come about the same time Luann's computer gets here.
Probably.
Anyway, I thought it was the neatest thing.
It is.
That is. That's really cool.
It is. I love it. I'm going to see it. You'll bring it?
Yeah, when I get it.
When you get it.
That's neat.
Well, we've done another 120, 223, I guess, this
far. Yeah.
Houston's going to have Skype next week, so he'll sound real good. And
yeah, and that's going to be cool.
I don't know why he's going to all that trouble. He'll be here in a couple of weeks.
Oh, you know it.
And Al Gore's going to join the, to probably get out of the Democrats.
So which happens first, right?
Whichever one happens first, Al Gore or Tom Houston
materializes.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you, Don Pat. Thank you, Don Show.
We'll
do it again next week. I'm Phil Parr, in case you had wondered who I was. I was just thinking, what are you that is? And thought it was Arthur Godfrey or somebody. I'm Phil Parr. He said to my man, he pick up his hammer and saw.